Good afternoon. Whoa.
Back from that mic.
Yeah. Can everybody hear me all right? That's loud. Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome to the second Faculty Senate meeting for this academic year. Jane, could you take the roll, please?
Albertson.
Present.
Okay. Baker.
Here.
Barnes.
Here.
Berge. Bret Hart. C. Chen. Kaufman.
Present.
Cook.
Philip Patterson for Christine Cook.
Okay, thank you, Phil. Condi.
Present.
Thank you. Davis.
Here.
Dean.
Here.
Duke.
Here.
Fallon.
Here.
Focesato.
Here.
Gibson.
Here.
Gustafson. Hahn. Hardy.
Here.
Healy.
Here.
Horstmann. Johnson.
Here.
Johnston.
Here.
Jolly. Keeland.
Here.
Lardon.
Here.
Lovecraft.
Present.
Marr. McCartney.
Here.
Meyer. Misra.
Here.
Moser. Newberry. Radenboe.
Phone present.
Thank you. Shellcross.
Here.
Short.
Substituting for Margaret Short, John Gimble.
Okay. Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Webley.
Here.
Winfrey.
Here.
Windsor.
Here.
Yari.
Here.
Zhang.
Rory Peterson here for Zhanzang.
Thank you. And acknowledging our ex officio members is Tony Record present. Libby Eddy. Libby's here. Brad Crick, staff counsel. Okay, I think he will come in the second hour. Anyone here from ASUAF? Okay. Athletics. Danny. I think Danny's traveling. Dean Herman is here. And our provost, Susan, and our vice provost, Alex Fitz. And that'll do it.
Thank you, Jane. Okay, we do not yet have minutes available to approve, so we'll postpone the approval of the minutes from the last meeting until the next meeting. And I hope you've had a chance to look over the agenda and would entertain a move to a motion to adopt it.
I have an item to add. This is Debu. Debu, yeah. I have an item to add to the discussion items on geographic differentials. So if that can be added right now, then that's...
On what differentials, I'm sorry?
Geographic differentials of pay.
A new item or
a discussion item?
Okay. Can it be fairly quick?
Yes.
Okay. 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 Any other concerns, comments? Any objections to the agenda? Okay. Seeing none, the agenda is adopted. Currently, we have no pending motions before the Chancellor. He signed the one motion that we put forward to him last month, which was the revision to the guidelines concerning administrator reviews. We go now to my remarks. I wanted to update you on a couple of things. One is that Cecile and I have been attending various school and college convocations, and that's turned into a fairly useful way for us to sort of make contact with faculty, wave the Faculty Senate flag, and try to sort of pump up interest in especially senior faculty among the colleges to potentially be part of the Senate activities, either through permanent committees in which non-senators can serve, or potentially even running for the Senate in the future. What I'd like to do here is essentially ask you all to get some sense of whether or not that activity, which was maybe about 5 minutes or so in each convocation, whether that seemed to have had some sort of impact on your colleagues, whether that was useful or not. The second item I wanted to bring up is that just sort of to keep you appraised of what's happening with the General Education Learning Outcomes Committee. That's a statewide group that's working on adoption of a common set of student learning outcomes. That committee has started with the learning outcomes that the Faculty Senate here approved back in 2011, and has pretty much drafted a set of learning outcomes that looks very, very similar, almost the same, just some minor tweaks here and there to the ones that we adopted. So this is fairly good news with respect to the progress for our campus in moving towards those learning outcomes. We're not seeing the target move a great deal. The other aspect of it that's very useful for us is that we're now moving on to try to figure out how the three universities together would like to see the university regulations change that would enable the that would remove somewhat of an impediment towards the progress of the development of the new core curriculum or the new general education curriculum. And then finally, this is just in the name of rumor squelching, I guess. There has been here and there some rumors concerning what the Faculty Senate is doing with respect to Blackboard. That occasionally I get an email or I hear a person say, why is the Faculty Senate getting rid of Blackboard? Okay, so I want to sort of make sure that everybody here can quell those rumors. The Faculty Senate has no power to get rid of Blackboard. We don't choose the learning management system. All our activity is with e-learning and Carol Gehring's group has been towards getting some faculty input into what would be the next learning management system, whether it continues to be Blackboard or is potentially some other one. And we're continuing to work on that, but I wanted to make sure that if anybody says to you, why is the Faculty Senate getting rid of Blackboard, you can say they're not. We're not. Okay? That's it for my comments. On to President-elect Cecile Lardon's comments.
Okay, mine are short and dovetail a little bit. I'm just going to report a little bit on SAC, Statewide Academic Council. There was sort of an interesting idea that was discussed. I don't know where it's going to go, but it was about the possibility of adapting a university college model. It was presented to the group, and the three provosts had different reactions, and I don't know if Susan wants to say, the provost wants to say anything more about that, but it was kind of an interesting idea that was brought up. The way I understand university college model is that basically it's sort of a cohort model for students going, bring it closer, okay, kind of a cohort model for students going through their undergraduate degree, and that can vary from a very structured approach where they sort of get handed their course schedule every semester to something a bit more flexible. One of the alternate ideas that was presented was to have it be more flexible, but maybe give students a deadline by which they have to complete certain foundation courses, so kind of the core, a lot of the core courses. So you have to complete certain courses by the end of your sophomore year, let's say. So this was, there was no decision. It was just a discussion item, but I think kind of an interesting one because it presents a very different approach and philosophy than we currently have. So something maybe to think about. I think that the more important topic for today is e-learning, which is being discussed at every level of the system. And I really think that the faculty have to become more proactive and perhaps vocal in the things that we already do and the things that we would like to do and have plans for or would like to be creative about in terms of using instructional technology either in face-to-face classes or in distance classes, how we have started to blend different delivery methods in our various courses. So I think it's really important that we, again, that as faculty, we sort of start to become more vocal and more focused in our efforts in that regard. I don't have any specifics right now, but I just want to really float that thought, that because if we don't sort of can get our brains around that, we might be told at some point what we need to do. So I know there's a lot of innovation already. So I really encourage all of us to be innovative, to sort of participate in things like e-learning site program that is training faculty to sort of be mentors and facilitators for other faculty to innovate with technology in their instruction. Over the course of the year, I'd like to have more discussions about that.
Any questions for Cecile? Seeing none. The chancellor's away this week and this month, at this time, and we'll move on to provost remarks.
He'll call in this week.
That's right. He'll be calling in later on.
Yes, and so the chancellor will talk, among other things, about the Board of Regents meetings that occurred a couple of weeks ago. So I won't talk too much about that. First, just a couple of update sort of items. The differential tuition for the School of Management that was presented here at the last meeting went to the Board of Regents. The Regents' decision was simply that this should be the President's decision rather than theirs. And so now the decision is pending with the president in a slightly modified form. Relative to Cecile's comments about the University College proposal, University colleges are many and varied in different institutions. Sometimes they're merely a way of organizing and supervising and advising general studies students. Sometimes they're built on cohort models, as Cecile mentioned. They've been shown, in terms of cohort-type models, to be quite effective in improving retention of students and improving their progress toward degrees. But before we can move down that path here, I think we need to study the composition of our student body carefully. I know that we have many transfer and returning students. We have older students sometimes. We have a lot of variety in terms of the qualifications or preparation of students that come to us. And we also have some circumstances where a lot of our students need to work in order to be able to attend the university. And if they're working, that constrains their schedules. So I am broadly in favor of the goals of a university college, but I think we will need to tailor any approach that we use to be sure that it serves the kinds of students that we actually have. Now, more general series of remarks that I'll try to keep short is that at the end of this month, October 30th and 31st, most of the administrators of the university have been invited to a couple of statewide meetings. The first day is intended to improve our leadership capabilities, and the second day is supposed to be a discussion of shaping the future of the university. It is the implementation phase of the Strategic Directions Initiative that's been underway for several years. And we've been getting some signals that the goal there is not simply to talk about a business as usual slight reshaping of the university and its future, but to talk about some fairly dramatic changes. We don't know specifically what might be asked for there. We don't know what approach that the statewide administration has decided to take on this. So I'm just saying that this is something I think there'll be Senate representation at this statewide meeting, and that I will certainly come back to the faculty and to the rest of the university to discuss what is proposed there. I think that some of the pressures that the university and the university system is under are clearly important and things that we need to consider carefully. We've talked quite a bit about the fact that our fixed costs keep going up, yet our revenues don't keep growing at the same pace. This results in a need to economize, cut our costs. It also drives a need to, if at all possible, increase our revenues, our net revenues above costs. It requires us to think very hard about each and every expenditure that we make and whether this is really contributing to making this a strong university that serves the state and its students well. So I personally am going to be thinking very hard about what I can do to further those ends, to make this the university that continues to be successful, continues to be the best in Alaska, continues to serve its students very well and prepare them for life and for their careers. This does exist in an increasingly challenging environment, and so it's something that's going to require all of us to think very creatively, but also flexibly about how we can move forward and not succumb to some of the challenges that are facing most universities across the country, but certainly here in Alaska as well.
Thank you, Provost Hendricks. At this time, I would like to invite Eric Madsen to introduce our guest speaker.
Thank you, David. I'd like to introduce you to Melba Fay. You can see in the agenda that she is the Director of Client Support for Data 180, so I'll skip over that part. But mention maybe just three things. One, like the co-founders of that company, Melba comes out of an academic background. And when you work at a university, it really makes a difference. You can, when you're trying to talk to people who understand the things that you're dealing with, and that's been a tremendous advantage to us. I will say we had a very interesting session this morning with the administrative assistants, the unit-level system administrators, who were pointing out things like we have certain records retention policies here at the university that sometime in the not-too-far future we may want to begin to rethink as we move toward electronic data keeping. And then finally, there is a session here right after the Senate meeting, well, not immediately after, but at 3:30 this afternoon, and we hope that all of you will be able to stay and that, in fact, some of our other colleagues will join us. So, Melba, thank you very much for being with us these 3 days.
Yep. Hello, and thank you so very much for inviting me to campus. It's been just a wonderful trip so far, and I can't tell you how excited I was just learning that I was going to be able to do this. So I want to show the first screen, and as you can tell, for the leadership team, I put myself first. Since my boss isn't here, I figured I could do that. But the truth is that Data 180 is very faculty-centered or academically-centered. Our two founders are actually faculty members at Morehead State, one of whom just retired, and of course he came back and is still teaching. Scott Weimer is in the computer science department. And the reason that they drove the idea of creating this electronic faculty reporting system is because they understood fully what it meant to be able to provide data to the institution at regular periods during the academic year. There was also the issue for them of being asked repeatedly and at different times during the year for data that they felt they could develop an information hub to be able to pull everything from. So that's where this company was born. At the very core of what the system is a data hub. And the idea here is that all your inputs could then become outputs. And the smarter you are about collecting the data, the more creative you can be on the output. So again, you can see here, I don't have to read this for you, but you know, we collect information, you know, even down to just contact information. But for each faculty member, this is hopefully where you will start thinking to store your scholarly data, your service activities, your teaching data. And as you can see, there's a number of things that can be done with the data, one of which, of course, is accreditation. But there's also a side, particularly, you know, just personally for faculty members, we've recently added the ability to expand how faculty members can manage their personal CVs and also create templates for recording for grant reporting purposes and grant requests for sponsored projects. So we have templates in there for NIH and NSF and ABET. We have one for USDA. And as being requested by other campuses, we are developing these templates to have available. You know, it's a little bit, you know, to learn how to navigate through the system. But again, because this was centered from a faculty perspective, the expectation is that a faculty member would also experience ease of use. Okay, this is just kind of an overview of the system. This is just your basic input screen, your home screen. This is what it would look like when you logged in. But I'd like to speak just a little bit about what has happened here on the campus. For rolling out the system here, the first focus was going to be for the annual activities reporting. Our system is designed to be rolled out with defaults in the system. So we have default sections, default templates, all this stuff. The beauty of our product, one of them, is the fact that it is so customizable that we can customize it to the needs of the institution. And that's what we were striving to do for this first rollout, was to take what was needed for the AAR and try to match it as closely as possible to what was being collected within the system. I think we came fairly close. There's only a couple of things that I can think of that at least for today can't be accomplished, but I am very proud to announce that by October 20th, any of the barriers that we had up to this point I think are going to be resolved. We are getting ready to release some very, very powerful functions that will let us customize the system even further. So again, we focus on faculty needs, administrative needs. Our implementation, we take information from the institution and review it and then match, you know, do a fit gap analysis to try to match our system to campus needs. And then hopefully after we get through the first introduction, the first implementation, the first round of getting faculty members to be active in the system, then we can expand it to handle more things for the campus. There's just so many things I can think of that the system can do, and hopefully more efficiently than is being done now in a paper-based system. As terms of security, this is a big question for faculty members. It's who can see my information and who has access to it. A lot of that is really driven by what the campus decides. There are permissions that are available both as an individual and as a chair, a dean, provost level. So it's a hierarchical system. We take your organizational structure, and then based on your organizational structure is where we can center access for faculty faculty data. It's also there's also another level, which is a unit level, so we can set permissions based on units, again, in a hierarchical system. But on a higher level here, you can see we are a hosted solution, and we do partner with, or we have services with iNetU. You can see the authentication systems that are available for our campus here. We're using Shibboleth, and it's, it seems to be working fairly well. For training and support, we offer online, in-house, of course, which is one of the reasons that I'm here. And really, as a company, we do try to listen to what our clients need and try to address those. We are a small company, no doubt. But I can tell you that each one of us is very dedicated to our clients and very capable. So in terms of companies that I've worked for, I think this is the happiest I've been in a long time. So just a very brief overview, and I can open for questions. Yes, sir.
So I just have a question about security. I mean, it seems like a lot of the information we would be putting on here would be something we would want to have kept secure, and in the last week or so we've learned that even Adobe can't keep those sort of data secure. So,
well, I don't work for Adobe.
It's a concern for me, at least. Maybe that's just a comment rather than a question.
Well, I can only really speak to what I know. And what I know is the history, not just with the company, but even before. When I was at the University of Akron, I was a project manager there. And I understand what it takes to roll the system out to a campus, and I understand the battles and the barriers you have to plow through sometimes in order to have adoption of the system, and one of which is security. But I also know that we wouldn't have the contracts that we do with the customers that we do if we weren't good at this. I also know that in issues where we've had institutions, just not too long ago, one of our clients, there was a faculty member who asserted that he had certain data in the system at the time of his review. And what we had to do is we had to go back and look at the backup for that time period in order to determine whether or not it was accurate. The fact that we were able to go back 2 years to be able to pull that and be able to compare what the system had in the, there during that time and now was at, really served the client very well to be able to make their decision. All I can say is, as far as I'm concerned, and I know that our owners are very sensitive to this because, again, they are faculty members, so they understand. What's important. Yes?
So I know you're doing some training, right, like 3:30 today, but for people that can't come or people who are going to want more training like next spring because we've just completed our reports for last year, so will there be more then?
Absolutely. Yes.
Hands-on?
The plan now is, you know, now that we've got the system set up for this one purpose, and we know that it is not fully developed. We know that there is more to be done, and there are decisions that to be made on the campus for, you know, a number of things. As those decisions are made and as needed, you know, we'll do that development. And, you know, as Eric can attest, we are available a lot, and virtually, or, you know, be happy to come back out here again. but yes, we can do a webinar. We can do it. We've offered webinars just for individual departments. We've done it for colleges. We just need to know what and when, and we can arrange that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hi. I'm not entirely sure how to phrase this question because I haven't really got it fully developed yet. But I understand the need for increased efficiency in reporting. And oftentimes we're asked to report the same things that we've done on annual reports at other times during the year for other purposes, for example, outcomes assessment, et cetera. But I'm a little concerned about who is going to be able to use this data and privacy issues, because a lot of the data on the annual reports, for example, are things that are more narrative in style and are not necessarily the things that are easily extractable into statistical information, and I'm not sure whether I'm not sure to what extent that information is being used statistically for other purposes than the annual report, and I'm not sure how I feel about making it available to people to use, but I don't even know who's going to be able to use this. I mean, presumably this is going to be available for use at all sorts of different levels for all sorts of different purposes, as we've seen. So I'm a little hesitant about this.
I think I can address it perhaps better than Melba can. The narrative self-evaluation is not part of what you're being asked to submit through the Faculty 180 reporting system. Your self-assessment, the narrative, is going to be submitted separately to your dean if you use this product. And that's in response to some concerns that faculty had earlier about the content of that report being available potentially to people other than their dean for whom they had intended it. So the remainder of the report in this electronic form will the only required information is the information that is currently on the Word form that you would submit annually. There are other opportunities to enter optional additional information in the Data 180 product, but we're not requiring more than the Word form that has always been used, or has been not always, but has been used for a long time for faculty activity reporting. Does that address your concern? Yeah. Okay.
Could I ask the provost a follow-up question on that? So, all of the information in this data bank, would you say that all of it is a matter of public record, publications, salaries, or is there going to be some corner of the data bank where, say, letters of reprimand and reports from the grade appeals committee and those sorts of things get filed?
Those sorts of things aren't going to be part of the Data 180 reporting. Like I say, they're going to the only things that are going into it now are the ones that are on the Word form that you've been using for some time. If we decide to add other things in the future, that'll be a matter of discussion with the faculty. But it's certainly not intended nor appropriate for keeping track of disciplinary actions or anything of the sort. Much of the information is of a rather public nature, like your publications and so forth. The classes that you've taught are published in class schedules, so that's not a secret either, and so on. There are a few things that are confidential from the student side. For instance, the forms have asked you to supply the names of the graduate students that you supervise. Well, that could be viewed as FERPA-protected information, and for that reason, we don't allow access to the information except to a fairly narrowly focused group of people, mostly administrators like me, like the deans, the same people that would view your annual activity reports in any case, a few staff members who would be charged with producing reports, for example, for accreditation would have access at least to parts of the information.
I use the system to do my report this year.
Well, thank you.
And the most part is a couple steps forward in some areas, a couple steps sideways in others. But one, what I thought was a fairly significant step backward was the entry of scholarly activities. Before, it used to be a relatively simple process of copying and pasting entire citations from either our CV or from an auto-generated bibliography from a management system like EndNote into the Word-based form. But now that process has been replaced by a rather tedious process where you click new publication, copy-paste title, copy-paste journal title, enter the year, copy-paste co-author 1, copy-paste co-author 2, oh, it's a UAF co-author, we have to search the database for the UAF co-authors, order the co-authors. And so my concern is if I'm ever at a productivity level to where I'm, you know, co-author of several tens of publications per year, I'm going to have to start allocating workload units just to fill out my annual activity.
I understand completely. Well, remember I said that our company is owned by two academics? Okay. So having said that, and I really wish we had this conversation before because you can import.
Well, I tried that actually too. It allows import from BibTeX and also
our IANT.
And I tried both of those, both exporting my EndNote database into BibTeX and also into RIS, and in the BibTeX case, it rejected all of my publications. And then the IRS form, or the IRS RIS format, it rejected all but three, and the three that came through were miscategorized, and I had to go back and do manual re-entry of the data anyway, so I ended up basically doing manual entry of all of them.
Well, yeah, and I, again, I can't speak to the experience that you had, but one of the things I can say is when I worked at the University of Akron, you know, I was working for the College of Arts and Sciences, and we have about 300 faculty members or so, and one of my full-time faculty, and one of my responsibilities was to import and not just import but populate their entire CVs into the system. So I have a lot of experience in doing that, and I don't know why you experienced what you did, but that has not been my experience. So I'd be interested to learn a bit more about the process.
It'd be helpful if the guide that was available on the website at least addressed the automatic import.
Yes, I agree. As a matter of fact,
that wasn't part of the guide.
Yes, I completely agree. As a matter of fact, we just contracted with actually the woman that I worked with in Akron, because we did a fairly decent job at creating tutorials and things that were needed. So we actually just hired her contractually to, from starting from a faculty perspective, to start creating videos. So I expect within the next 4 to 6 weeks, we're going to have some very good products.
Okay, it didn't seem like it was a training issue, because I know how to copy paste into individual fields. That was the problem.
Yeah.
The issue is several tens of clicks and operations per citation, when before it used to be one.
I'd like to watch you through that process.
I also started entering my bibliographic information, and I actually gave up in the end because I had the same experience. And I finally got through, and I got to view my citation, you know, and it looked great. Click, accept, and save. And then I went back, and it actually wasn't there. And I actually logged out of the system and back into the system, and it still wasn't there. So then I contacted the help, and they were great. They got back to me right away. And they said they could see it there. And then I think the next day I logged in, and then I could see it at my end. But it was just, so at that point, I'm like, because it took so long to enter it with all the drop-down menus. If it had actually saved it, I wouldn't have minded the fact that it wasn't there. I did try it twice. And then so the help person, when he lived on, he actually sent me a screenshot of what he could see. And he actually did have it in there twice, because I had it in there twice, but it wasn't.
Yeah, and there's probably a very good reason for that, one of which I will be demonstrating, and it's probably the view that you were in, because there's at least a couple of ways that you could have viewed that.
Okay.
So that's a possibility.
Okay. And then, I have to say, all the sort of online help feedback that I got was fabulous.
Thank you.
That was really great. Just got a little frustrated.
I understand.
Any other questions?
Just one point of clarification, if I may. The open session here this afternoon at 3:30 and tomorrow at IARC 501 at 3:30 are specifically not designed as training sessions per se, but more as discussion sessions. For example, Melba alluded to some of the things the system can do for you optionally. We can go that direction. However, the group that's there gets to decide. And if you'd like her to show you how to do imports or continue the discussion about some of these other things, that's what we'll do. So, thank you.
I just had a quick question. Comparing your experience, your company's experience with us versus other universities, how has your experience with us compared with that? Is it kind of well within the cloud of customizing that you had to do, or is this kind of pushing an envelope?
Which aspect? I got to tell you, none are the same, to be quite honest. And actually, it depends on the size of the institution, because right now we are working with the University of Arizona. So they're on, like, huge level there. and the resources that are available on the campus. And actually, not just that, the support of the campus. One of the things that I think is great here is, one, the fact that I'm here today. That speaks volumes to whether or not this is going to be successful on the campus. So that's always a wonderful thing to have. But in terms of other clients, kind of the same, I guess.
Okay. So,
pretty much
so,
within the
so,
range.
So within the range of variability, not...
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I decided to come out here. That should say something.
Right. Okay. Any other questions for...
Melba.
Melba, thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay. Our next topic is concerning English and math placement policy changes. And Cindy Hardy, you ready? You can, if you can find you.
Maybe at the corner there.
Yeah. Is there a corner mic there?
Or come up.
Or come up. Either way is fine.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, can you hear me? No.
It was on when you started.
How's that? Yeah. Okay. So I've asked Libby to stay by my side here while I talk about this. So I'm Cindy Hardy. I'm the chair of the Student Academic Development and Achievement Committee, otherwise known as SADA. And I thought we were going to have a quiet year, but it's turned out that a lot of important issues are kind of coming across our plate. And they're usually, they've kind of come across in the sense of faculty and departments wanting to make some apparently minor changes that have broad ramifications. And so that's why I asked to come and speak today. Two items that we have on our table. One is a motion that came from the math and developmental math departments to change placement into math from AccuPlacer, ACT, SAT, or any other method that we have to ALEKS. And that's something that we've been, ALEKS, it's a math program, and they have a placement module. In general, this seems like a great idea. As we talk about it, we've come up with lots of different ramifications of it, and I'll talk about that in a second. The other thing that's coming along down the pike in terms of placement is that a year ago, the English and developmental English folks from UAA, UAS, and UAF got together and decided to align their placement into English 111 and then to kind of align, I say kind of because we have different courses, placement into all the DEVE or preparatory courses on each campus. And so some of us have been working on the follow-up to that, which, again, we thought was a simple number change, but in fact it actually impacts all the core classes potentially. So the third thing that we have on our agenda that I just wanted to mention, and David, I don't think you mentioned it, was we were handed a motion from from SAC, Statewide Academic Council, to look at, as a discussion item of our committee, the possibility of, how am I going to say this, having one admission standard for all three universities.
It would be a minimum admission standard. Each university would be free to have a...
Mm-hmm. And I think this ties in with what Cecile was talking about, the university college, because that begs the question of then what do you do with students who don't meet that, right? And that's part of our overview. So really quickly, I just wanted to talk about what some of the issues are that we've encountered working with the math placement and the English placement. And you're welcome to ask me questions, keeping in mind that I'm not a math person, I'm an English person, so I can answer those questions better. So in the math motion, and I'm not bringing the motion because it's still under discussion, we're going to be approving it at our meeting on Friday. Keep your fingers crossed. Some of the issues of the math motion is going to ALEKS for placement would require an additional fee to students, and this was quite controversial amongst the invested parties, shall we say. And so we're there's some discussion about whether or not, and I know, Susan, there was a meeting with you last Friday, whether or not this could be incorporated into the overall fees for students, whether it could be absorbed by the university. The math folks want the testing to be done as the student enrolls in their first math class, which might put it on a different time frame than admissions testing or overall placement testing. The other question that came up is that in some areas with special populations and in some rural areas, paper and pen testing or paper and pencil testing is still, if not the norm, there's a need for it because of accessibility. So that's there's been a big discussion about whether or not to leave asset testing in place for a limited number of students and whether that would do the same thing and how to work that around the ALEX. Interesting unintended consequence was a huge discussion about what do we do about the statement instructor permission on courses, that whether instructor permission can override this placement or not, which led to a whole discussion with Reiner and Curricular Affairs, or soon to be happening at Curricular Affairs, of what to do about these statements. Is there a statement in the catalog about instructor permission? It's like, see how this thing sort of unravels here. question about timing, when do students take the test? Students take ACT and SAT so up to a year in advance. Students coming in who are not coming directly from high school take placement testing throughout the summer up to at the point of registration. So there's some questions about that. ALEX benefits students if it's taken right at the point of registration. So you might have different timings. And then the other question was, again, back to questions for rural students, what about accessibility? Students, the advantage of ALEX is a student can take it in their home. It doesn't need to be proctored. The disadvantage is if they don't have good accessibility where they live, how do they get access to this testing? So I just wrote myself a little note here. In general, I think everyone who's been discussing this really supports this change. One of the things the module brings in is that they can take the test, they can take a six-week study module and retake the test, so it has a kind of a remedial element to it. And the other thing that they get, a student will get from ALEX is this PIE. There's a lot of talk about the PIE, which kind of illustrates where the student's math weaknesses are so they can focus specifically on those. All of that seems really good. So this is just mainly to keep you informed of what's going on in that discussion. English placement, Linda Hapsmith, she's not here. Linda Hapsmith did an enormous amount of work in the last couple weeks to look at the alignment of Accuplacer, SAT, ACT, Compass, any possible placement means that students could bring coming into English 111, and also looked at UAA and UAS, discovered that they had changed their Accuplacer scores and no other scores, so we're going to end up with all of our scores aligned. So if you have a placement score in Accuplacer and ACT, SAT, they're going to pretty much, to the extent that they can, because they test different things, but pretty much mean that a student is at the same level. But again, unintended consequences, as we've talked about this, we're testing reading and writing. We're going to do combined reading and writing scores on Accuplacer instead of just placing based on writing scores. And as faculty, we want to then put teeth to the reading requirement, so require reading and writing at the lower or developmental levels. What else are we doing? Because we're raising the English 111 score with Accuplacer testing, it provides a place for a course that we've had on the books for a while. It hasn't had a good placement range, so there's going to be a new course, 109, but then that raises the question. those of you who teach in core classes that have 111 placement required, does that mean that you want the new 111 placement level, or would the 109 level be enough? So again, more unintended consequences and questions. Also in discussion, we decided, well, maybe we want to drop the word English. We just want to say writing. So there's a motion that's coming our way. And then we're also doing, as Jane Harvey and I have been discussing this, we found that there's been a lot of catalog language creep, and so the catalog has changed from the last approved catalog. And so Sada will be looking at a larger motion that incorporates all the changes that come about through all of these two placement changes. Okay. I guess I don't need to say too much about this statewide motion, except that it's a motion to adopt admission requirements that are similar to UAFs for UAA and UAS. So SADA is just going to be reviewing this, making recommendations, but where we really get involved is what do we do with the students that are below that, and I think that's a bigger conversation. And then there's GIRC, which is looming above around all of this. So that's kind of what I wanted to share with you. It's a lot. It impacts a lot of what we do, especially at the 1 in 200 level. But I think it's all for the good.
So this is sort of your heads up that the next 4 or 5 Senate meetings will be all SADA motions.
Yes, lots of them.
Okay.
Thanks.
Any questions? Ms. Cindy?
And that, frankly, it's the faculty senate that ultimately says, yes, this is the change in policy.
Mm-hmm.
If we do something really dumb, it's us that we're going to have to blame. And so we're hoping to provide you with enough information that you can intelligently discuss it, and if approved, go, okay, well, this, we gave it our best shot, or discuss it and go, oh, my God, this is going to happen, and we can't live with that, go back to square zero or whatever. So we're going to be sending stuff out to you. We'll be begging you, maybe even pleading and begging, to look it over before the meeting, to think about various implications, ramifications, and then we can spend some time discussing it and either approve it or send it back to committee, hopefully approve.
Would this be one of those areas in which it would make sense to have an online discussion? We use that a few times in years past, where we can set up the online discussion, people can submit comments and so forth. So if it looks like you can break those up into sort of chunks of material that makes sense, we can set up maybe 2 or 3 online discussions about that to try to keep those organized, but also solicit a broader range of feedback.
I guess my hope would be SADA's going to meet about it. We had an hour and 35-minute meeting on Friday where we invited a number of concerned parties and to discuss this. We're also working closely with CAC on this. I guess my hope is that we could bring it to the Senate pretty much vetted out for a limited, and my hesitation is that I've been getting 20 emails a day with tinkering to different parts of the language, and different people are changing it in different ways, and it feels like I'm just kind of zigzagging back and forth with it. So my hope is that at the point when it's ready to come to Senate, maybe then we could do that, or maybe at the point that it comes to admin committee. But we're going to be approving it, keep your fingers crossed, on Friday. CAC is meeting the 14th, is that Monday? And hopefully they'll approve it, and so it will have a lot of vetting before it gets to us in its final form, the math motion.
Which, of course, doesn't mean it'll be perfect. It just means that it'll be vetted by several, and other eyes looking at it could find other problems potentially.
Right. Any other questions for Cindy? All right. Thank you, Cindy.
Welcome.
We have 2 external committee memberships that were outstanding, that were vacant. I'm sort of chagrined to report that they're filling by people's priorities. So the Parking Advisory Committee had 2 people who volunteered to sit on that committee, and Rorik Peterson wound up being our appointee, so thank Rorik very much for doing that. And we have had nobody interested in serving on the Bookstore Advisory Committee, and so that's still a vacant slot. I'd really like to try to solicit your or somebody's volunteering for that, because without that, it just means that we're all really happy with the way that the bookstore and your classes are going, that the bookstore is fulfilling your needs. And if that's the case, great. But if it's not the case, then this would be a good chance to have some faculty input into the evolution of the bookstore.
And it doesn't have to be a senator. So if you have a colleague, you know, who might be interested.
Do you hate?
Well, it's an important one, because it's, you know, none of us like sitting there in the first month of class when people don't have their books. So it's a fairly important one. And again, it doesn't have to be a senator. We just need some names so we can put somebody in that slot.
Right. Thank you. And in 4 minutes, we're going to take a break for photos and cookies and coffee, not necessarily in that order. Well, actually, yes, necessarily in that order, because the photo is set up for 2 o'clock. Correct, Jane? So, Debu, if you want to let us know what you had in mind with geographic differentials within
yes.
that time.
Yes, thank you. And I'll make it quick. And I apologize for bringing it up directly on this floor. But over the weekend, we heard from two different faculty senate presidents, UAA and UAS, that geographic differentials have been a big concern. And hence, Mike Davis actually took a lead in developing something of a resolution that everybody can look at, and we have passed it out to everybody. The important one is the fourth one. The University of Alaska Fairbanks has many employees that live in areas of the state where costs have increased significantly. And some of us may not feel the stiff, but there are people who feel the stiff. And we do have a Board of Regents policy 040506 that clearly says geographic differentials may be established by university regulations and be based on the most recent State of Alaska Geographic Differential Study. The last study that was done was by McDowell in 2008, I'm bringing it, or we are bringing it, on to the Faculty Senate for a discussion and a possible resolution in the future. So with that, I'll stop.
Okay. And you gave this text to whom?
Yes, to everybody. If there are extras, they should be with you. You didn't get one. Any extras, please?
Okay.
We had more than.
Oh, yeah.
And, Debu, just for clarification, I suppose it's obvious, but when you talk about geographic differential, are you talking about salary
yes.
differentials?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I would prefer not to, having not read this, I would prefer not to bring the resolution to the floor this meeting, just as a sort of a matter of principle, but it'd be worthwhile potentially to have folks look at this. And Knut Keeland, I'm singling you out because it seems like you as, are you still convener or are you chair at this point?
I'm chair by default.
Okay. And perhaps we'll have a conversation about this. That'd be all right. Okay. It is 2 o'clock, which means it is time to break and go have a photo shoot, which is down on the lower level of the Wood Center. And I believe the photographer's set up down there. So I'll see you down there. Okay. As folks are filtering... First of all, apologies to the folks online. You don't get cookies or coffee or anything like that, but we have them here. We have a number of motions and a resolution to tackle, and I'd like to start off with a proposed motion from the Administrative Committee concerning amending the bylaws to essentially change the way that the wording is in the bylaws to reflect the actual procedures that have been used by the Senate for a number of years. So that's attachment 193/1. You'll note that the current wording says that the Administrative Committee selects, appoints the committees, and of course that would be completely unwieldy. And so as a matter of practice, the President and President-elect, often working with the past President, propose a set of committee appointments, which are then approved by the admin committee and then ultimately confirmed by the faculty senate. The proposed wording changes essentially reflect the way that that actually is done and codifies it so that it's clear to future faculty senate leaderships. The proposed changes, as per common practice, the deletions are in square brackets and the additions are in bold all caps. Are there any questions?
Yes, I have a quick question.
Deb?
So this is not with respect to the change, but in the past, when we say administrative committee made the appointments or whatever, which administrative committee did that?
Is the Faculty Senate Administrative Committee. That's the committee made up of the chairs of all of the
permanent
and standing committees.
But let us say the administrative committee now is different from the administrative committee over the summer, last summer. No?
The people are different. Some of the people are different now from the people who served over the summer.
So the past administrative committee makes the appointment?
No. So over the summer, the president, the president-elect, sometimes the past president worked together and put together a draft.
Okay.
Many, many drafts, in fact.
Okay.
And then in the fall, first thing, it goes to the administrative committee.
But Debbie, you raise a good point. That is a kind of a problem in the way that it was worded that it had been worded. It's not clear whether we're talking about the spring admin committee or the subsequent admin committee of the fall. At least here, with the new wording, it's essentially clear that the president and president-elect are doing the work over the summer to come up with committee appointments, and then that fall's admin committee approves it.
Right.
Another quick question, please.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
And how long does a person stay on a committee? Is every single year the committees turn over, or is there committees that have people stay on more than 1 year?
The standard length of service is 2 years.
The standard sentence.
All right. Any other questions? Any further discussion? So, are there any objections to passing this motion?
I'll object.
I'm sorry?
I said object.
Okay. All right. Why don't we have a vote then? Let's see. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Was that a nay? Okay. Motion carries with one opposed. The next motion is a related motion concerning the appointment, or actually, it concerns the decisions that are made by the president and president-elect. And it proposes a mechanism by which decisions that the president and president-elect make can be appealed to a separate entity. There aren't very many decisions that the Faculty Senate president and president-elect are empowered to make. However, it makes little sense under the current bylaws that if somebody objects to those decisions or any one of those decisions, right now, essentially, the appeal process is to ask us nicely and we say no again, or something to that effect. So what we've proposed is a appeals procedure that brings that issue to a different group of people, that is the administrative committee, for consideration and potential remedy. So we've proposed inserting this language into the bylaws under officers under Article 4. Again, this is not so much a change. There's nothing being deleted. It's an addition.
Okay. May I ask a question?
Please.
So if someone's elected or is appointed for 2 years, when the next year comes around, are the same people that were appointed for 2 years stay on that, or does someone disappear?
I'm sorry, I think I need a clarification. Say one more time.
I'll start over. I'm sorry, maybe I wasn't clear. So I heard earlier that someone is appointed 2 years to a committee. Is that correct?
That's the standard appointment length, yes.
Okay, so a person who is appointed for 2 years is not under consideration to get off that committee in the second year or after their first year.
Well, certainly if a person asks to be put on a different committee, that request is usually honored.
Okay, but if the person's not, I just want to be clear that someone just doesn't get moved off a committee if they were on it for 1 year and they should be on it for the second year.
There's, to my knowledge, there's nothing that proscribes that happening. I mean, the standard length of service is 2 years, but I don't think there's, to my knowledge, I don't know of anything in the bylaws that says that a person cannot be moved.
Okay, I just want to make that clear. Then, therefore, if someone is thought they were put on for 2 years, but they only served for 1 year, and then the next year they're off, that's perfectly acceptable under the current rules.
I don't know of anything in the current rules that proscribe that, yes.
Thank you.
Debu, yes.
Okay, so this is a new addition to the bylaw, and the only conflict I see on this one, and it's a major conflict, is that if there is an appeal, for example, on the appointments by the president and president-elect to the Senate committees by a senator or a member, then it goes back to the same administrative committee that approved it. So that's a conflict, in my opinion. And so if this is in general, like, you know, for a policy or something, that's probably okay. But when it comes to, well, I don't know if it is okay or not. You know, I mean, if there is a policy that I personally disagree with you two, and I take it to the administrative committee, something else, I'm saying. It has been approved by the administrative committee. They're not going to look at it and say, well, you know, oh, Debu has brought a great point here, okay? So we need to rethink this one. That's number one, you know, how this, or we can have an, and I don't know how many appeals come up. That I don't know. Let us say one a year. We can always appoint an ad hoc committee that can be independent of the administrative committee that can look into this matter and resolve the issue. So that's my recommendation or suggestion on this one.
So I'll go ahead and try to address those two things. The first point, I understand your point that it seems like, well, if the admin committee approved the first thing that the president and president-elect did, why would they reverse themselves if an appeal comes along? My answer to that is that, generally speaking, the admin committee is not thinking about individual committee appointments so much as looking whether the overall committee membership looks about right. If an appeal comes along where somebody says, you know, this is not a good idea, and I object to the way that this came out because A, B, C. I have a fairly high confidence that the administrative committee will listen carefully to that and consider those points.
May I follow up?
And also, I want to add something to that. You know, the things that would be handled this way are very, very few, because it really only deals with things where the president and or president-elect made some sort of a decision. And there aren't many things. I mean, this is kind of it. So that's the only thing. And the appeal can come before the admin committee approves it. So as soon as somebody finds out what their committee assignment is, they can submit an appeal. So it can potentially, you know, be submitted before the admin committee votes on it.
What does, I'm not sure what that...
Well, let me follow up. I understood what she said. And I have told exactly the same. And I appreciate you bringing up this appeals appeals thing. I understand I have said the same thing, that there might be only one appeal a year, probably not, okay? And if so, it has to be a fair process for the person. If somebody is going to appeal, they really feel that they have to go and appeal that one. Otherwise, they won't appeal. I mean, why would I go and appeal something if I don't feel strongly that I should appeal, okay? So if there is, then there has to be a fair process. And many of even the senators, I doubt that they know anything going before anything going to the administrative committee for approval, okay? It always comes after the administrative committee's approval, and then the appeal process starts, probably, triggers. If that triggers, then we need an independent ad hoc committee, for example, or something to look at it fairly. I'm talking about a fair process here, okay? So that's all. This is my recommendation at this point. It's up to the body.
Basically, we can do one of two things right now. One is that you may offer an amendment to the motion. And the other is that we could say this is not ready for voting, and we can refer this motion to Faculty Affairs for further consideration. So it's mostly a question of whether there's a sense that this is in good enough shape to go ahead and make a decision now. If it looks like there's going to be a lot of discussion and we can't agree on that, then I would recommend that we go ahead and refer to Faculty Affairs.
One thing I'd like to add, this is sort of a little piece of information for the group. When we discussed this motion with some other people to get input on it, one of the recommendations was that parliamentary bodies usually don't engage in that sort of appeals process, that usually that's the prerogative of the body's leadership to make assignments to committees. So we're already sort of extending that prerogative, or we're extending that responsibility to the executive committee of the body, which is the administrative committee. So we're already extending that authority, which, you know, we don't really have anyway, because the ultimate decision is made by the Senate as a whole. Yeah.
I just had a question. A person who is so dissatisfied with the committee decision and then their appeal through this process can leave Faculty Senate without penalty, right?
Of course.
I mean, I'm new to Faculty Senate, so like if I chose tomorrow to disappear, to renege, or I don't know what the word, resign from Faculty Senate, I can do that, right?
Of course.
Yep, you can.
Without penalty? I mean, I know I have to look at other service commitments or whatever,
right,
but there's nothing that happens to me.
Right. If your unit has an alternate, then the alternate can fill you the rest of your term.
Okay, the alternate.
Right. Now, if you run out of alternates, that's another problem.
You got the clarification.
And that would result in a new election?
I don't think so.
So that would result in a new election?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
If we use up the alternates.
If we use up the alternates.
Debu?
Okay, so no, I was waiting for other discussion. If not, then
I saw your hand up.
Sorry. No, yeah. No, I meant to say follow up is that I will wait for a few other discussion. If not, then I would like to propose something. Yeah.
Okay, so I guess the thing to do at this point is I would entertain a motion to move this forward.
May I have one comment before?
Okay, Reiner has moved it, Is there a second? Okay, John Dean has seconded. So the motion is now on the floor to amend the bylaws with this. All right, at this point, are there any further discussions on this? Debu, did you want to offer an amendment?
Yes, I would like to offer an amendment that the administrative committee be not responsible for appeals process, but this is a friendly amendment, and an ad hoc committee be instituted to independent ad hoc committee to look into the appeals process.
Okay. Debu has offered an amendment. Is there a second to the amendment? Jane is seconded. Okay, so now the discussion is going to be on the proposed amendment.
Yeah, but who's going to be in that ad hoc committee, actually? Because, you know, it comes from the same floor, actually, where the people were discussing about that, ABC. They were already taking positions.
Yes, but...
we have an ad hoc independent committee. I mean,
yes.
I agree with you, okay?
But no, I understand.
Where we will pull that
Any suggestions? I don't know.
Yeah, help make a suggestion.
Okay, Donnie?
I was just going to ask Debbie, who would appoint this ad hoc committee?
That's a good point, yes.
Okay, any other discussion on the amendment?
Probably the faculty senate body can appoint.
Oh, good heavens.
I don't know. That's the best way to
really? We can't get somebody to serve on the bookstore committee.
It doesn't have to be a big committee. It can be three people committee, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying that it has to be a 20 people committee. It can be a three people committee.
Okay.
Vote.
All right. I hear the question is called. Okay. Well, the vote right now is on the amendment. That is, do we want to change the language to say ad hoc instead of administrative committee? Okay. All those in favor of ad hoc, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say nay.
Nay.
I believe the nays have it. Does anyone want to challenge that? Okay, the nays have it. We're back to the original motion. And the motion is to have the administrative committee hear and make a ruling on any appeals. To President-elect recommendations. Any other discussion on that?
I have a point of discussion, please.
Go ahead.
I still, getting back to this idea that if there's a two-year appointment and if we broke it up in 1 year, we need to have some kind of language in there that says it was a two-year appointment and there should be some kind of, I guess, preference to the person who has a two-year appointment if they want to keep it.
Is this a discussion item concerning the appeals process?
Yeah, I mean it's related to this. I tried to get in earlier, but I got pushed out. I guess you didn't hear me. So I was trying to bring it in now because it could still work here.
Okay, so your concern is that I guess that this potentially could be covered by it. I'm not sure that we need to change the wording of this motion at all, because if somebody is unhappy about being moved off their committee before 2 years is up, they would be more than welcome to appeal it.
Yeah, and I think that should, you know, someone should have preference if they didn't want to move off the committee and they're pushed off the committee, that could be seen as, you know, the question is why were they pushed off the committee, you know. It could be a lot of reasons, but we don't want that. They were kicked off the committee because they did something the committee didn't like, or it could be just, like you said, you're trying to do your accounting, and that's why.
And that certainly could be part of the language of the appeal. Okay. Any other discussion concerning the motion? All right. Go ahead.
I'm going to oppose this motion for the same reason that Debu said, you know, it is good that there's some kind of appeals process, but this isn't going to really be anything more than a rubber stamp for what the administration has done. So I don't think this really may look good on paper, but most people that are concerned about an appointment are probably not going to go through this process because the deck is already stacked against them to begin with. So I just don't think this is going to really solve anything other than put a process in motion, but it's not one that will probably get a favorable response from the person that's appealing his decision.
Okay.
I resent the allegation that we are not rational people, and any of us could be members of the administrative committee from time to time, that can't be swayed by a good argument.
All right. Anybody want to call the question? We can vote.
Do it.
Okay. We've already heard at least one person speaking in opposition, so I'm going to go ahead and have a vote. All those in favor of the motion as worded, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say nay.
Nay.
I believe the ayes have it. Anyone want to challenge that? Any abstentions? Thank you. Okay. I still think the ayes have it. Finally, we move on to our third motion, which is concerning the committee appointments. And these are the committee appointments that Cecile and I, in consultation with past President Jennifer Reynolds, developed over the summer. These were approved by the administrative committee, and now they are here for your confirmation. And so this motion is to confirm the committees as enumerated on attachment 193/3. Thank you. It's been moved. Seconded. Did anyone second?
Second.
Thank you, Donnie. Donnie seconded. Discussion? And I saw somebody. Yes, Jane.
So I had a question about the core review committee. There's no CRCD or CTC rep, and I believe that's the committee that often looks specifically at the AA degree whose home is in CRCD. So I'm wondering why there wouldn't be a rep from CTC or CRCD on that.
That is one of the permanent committees, and in a permanent committee, as you know, is one that's made up of both senators and non-senators.
Right.
And I'm going to consult really quickly with Cecile and Jane because they're whispering next to me.
Yeah, Jane's the expert. Yeah, here.
I'm sorry, but I was just thinking the committee can choose to change their membership by changing their bylaws, and this committee hasn't done that. But they probably would welcome the suggestion.
Thank you.
And the point that I was trying to make about the permanent and standing committees is that we appoint the faculty senators to the standing committees, and we appoint the senators who are members of the permanent committees. But the rest of the membership of the permanent committees are determined by other means.
I understand that.
The joint appointment is not either a standing committee or a permanent committee. That's an ad hoc committee that's working on a specific task. Yeah, right. Okay, Chris?
I have a point of clarification about this. I was on the core review committee for a number of years in the past as CLA's representative, and my recollection was that the committee approved petitions for students who wanted to substitute credit for our core courses for courses they took elsewhere. And so I just looked up the bylaws for the core review committee, and it does say the core review committee reviews and approves courses submitted by the appropriate school, college, curriculum councils for their inclusion in the core. Coordinates and recommends changes to the core, develops process for assessment of the core, regularly reports on assessment of the core, so on and so forth, but I don't see anything here about it specifically reviewing the AA degree. I know that CRCD does teach core courses and requires core courses, But I was a bit confused by the wording of the way you initially presented things. Were you suggesting that the core review committee somehow had some kind of authority over the AA as a degree?
No.
I'm overlapped with the core?
No, I wasn't suggesting that.
Oh, okay. Good. I do agree that it would be a good idea to have a CRCD person on it, but I just wanted to clarify that
right.
One point about the committee's mission.
Right.
If you look at attachment 6, point number 3, it specifically talks about that committee discussing the AA and the AAS degree. Mm.
Attachment 6 to today's?
Uh-huh. Anyway, we're getting a little bit off the topic of the of approving the committee memberships. Debu.
Yeah, just a point of clarification here. So the standing committees, the three that we have, are there only three? Curricular affairs, faculty affairs, and unit criteria, or there are more? Those are
yes,
the
that's
three
it.
On my list. Right? Now, should those be representative of all the units that we have, or they can they don't have to be?
They don't have to. There are some specific guidelines for some committees concerning representation that we have to obey. This is one of the reasons why we don't have an entire committee appoint all these committees.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other discussion on this?
Move to approve.
I hear a motion to approve. Do we have a second? John Dean seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay.
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 Okay, the ayes have it. Any abstentions? Okay, the committees are confirmed. The last bit of new business concerns the first meeting that I went to of the System Governance Council. Now, this is something I only became recently aware of, that there was such a thing, to be honest with you. The System Governance Council is the leadership of the faculty senates, the leadership of the state staff councils, and the leadership of the student government governing bodies across all three universities in the statewide system. So this is a committee that deals with issues of common concern to all of those groups. And this was a teleconference that was held a couple of Mondays ago. And in the course of the discussion, it came out that I had thought at the time it was the Union of Students at the University of Alaska Anchorage, but I'm given to understand that I misheard that it was actually a student group at the University of Alaska Anchorage that was hoping, that is planning to advance a motion essentially banning any tobacco use on any University of Alaska properties, so that's not just buildings but properties, across the entire statewide system. So banning all tobacco use, all smoking, but also all chewing tobacco and so forth across the entire system. And in the course of that discussion, I said, well, I don't think that's a very good idea. And the other folks on the phone says, we don't really care what you think. What does your Senate think? So we developed this motion, this resolution, to get a sense of what the Senate thinks, and I've biased it a little bit by essentially wording it to indicate how I think about it. But this is the resolution that I'm asking you to vote on today, which is essentially making it the sense of the Senate, the Faculty Senate, that we oppose having a statewide ban on the use of all tobacco products anywhere on University of Alaska properties. Okay, discussion. Oh, and by the way, the difference between a resolution and a motion, just in case you need a reminder, a resolution is simply, it's kind of like what you do when you don't have power to do something, but you just want to sort of have it be known that this is the voice of the body.
Does this include sale as well? Because that essentially means that we have to kick open keg out, right? And the gas station, and
it's well. I don't know exactly what the motion is that they're trying to bring up to the Board of Regents. Okay, And the resolution that we're attempting to vote on here is that we're in, that we're opposed, I claim, to such a ban, to such a statewide ban. I'm not sure. See, I've not seen the wording of the proposed motion. I do know that it was being advanced as a zero-tolerance policy. I do know that there are currently some rules already concerning tobacco sale on various campuses. I don't know what those are. How exactly that would be affected on ancillary properties like Oak and Keg, I don't know, because I haven't seen the wording. So I'm trying to get a sense from this body whether it's too soon to say we think that this is a bad idea or not.
I'm just curious about, so this is a group of students that is pushing this? So
yes, that's correct.
Why? What's the background? I totally don't get it. And do they have the backup from all students, or is it just a random group of people? I mean, I very much doubt that there's a whole group of students that are behind this.
Provost Hendricks.
These individuals testified at the Board of Regents meeting preceding the most recent one, so the one back in June. And they it appears to be a well-organized and substantial group, but right now centered mostly at UAA. And it's basically composed of individuals who are very strongly against tobacco use for health reasons. And many of them are various kinds of health students, nursing students, and so on.
Okay. John?
What are the current rules for tobacco use on campuses? Because we don't have people smoking in our classes now anymore. We're smoking in our building, so there's already a strong ban out there on where you can and can't smoke.
I'm going to let Provost Hendricks handle that.
The current rule is indeed that you may not smoke inside any university building except in some of the private residences, but not in dormitories or any of the shared housing units. The other rule is that people are supposed to not smoke within 50 feet of any building, although that one isn't commonly observed.
And so what the proposed motion that is being advanced towards the Board of Regents, that would remove smoking and any tobacco use from anywhere on university property. So that's not just within buildings, that's outside of buildings, on sidewalks, and so forth. And I saw your hand first.
I just wanted to voice my support for your opposition to this. I grew up in a smoking household. My mother is of Texas, but I also know how very difficult it is to up and quit, and I also think that as long as it's legal in the United States, I don't think it's anyone else. And I think we have a fairly good policy of not smoking inside the building, and I think there needs to be some balance. A lot of people on campus who still smoke, and if they are suddenly required not to smoke anywhere on campus, that might have some adverse effects on employment. On their employee. In other words, will we retain them? I don't know. Whatever the case, I think that there needs to be a delicate balance what we allow and how far we intrude into people's own choices about their own health.
Okay, thank you. Laura?
Yeah, I kind of would also be interested what the same group is feeling about alcohol use on campus. I'm absolutely serious. And then what's next? So no fatty foods, so no hamburgers on campus?
And when they get the salt, I'm going to really be upset.
No, they got me by the beer already.
Yes.
There was a survey by, I think it was staff council sent out last week to, I don't know whether it was just US staff or I'm not sure why I was on the email list, but basically it was a survey asking people their opinions on the tobacco use for them at campus. And I just wonder how, if you've seen the results of that survey.
I have not, and we have a representative from staff council. Do you want to just very briefly, tell us where you are on that?
Yes, the survey went out. We're talking to the second line.
Just for the folks online, please. Thank you.
Yeah.
pardon, the survey went out on Friday of last week. That you got it is probably some problem with how our listserv identifies who should be on it. But it's not closed to anyone in particular, but it is supposed to be, you know, a staff response. We should have some results from it next week by our meeting. I don't have any results for it right now. I can tell you we have over 500 responses to the tobacco part of that survey alone.
So would you be willing, after you said I had a chance to look at it, to give us a brief report?
Yes, we should have. I would expect we'll have some indication at our staff council meeting next week, and then next month, your next meeting, I'll be able to bring back a report about that, too.
Great.
Peter, I'm sorry. Have you
okay. I was at the Admin Services Committee meeting, and some of the things that I brought up was, in Anchorage, when you walk out of a building, you walk off pretty much UA property. In UAF, you don't. So any public person walking on a sidewalk on campus, lower campus, is adhered to this rule as well. That's the first thing. Second one is, you could be a public person at traffic lights on university and college smoking a cigarette. That's officially UAF land. The police officer comes past and is about to pull them over and say, there's no ban. They jump into the road. That's technically not campus. They can smoke by this law. So I think the students in Anchorage are looking at this as all UAF, not realizing that when they walk on the sidewalk in Anchorage, that's not UAF land. When we do, it is UAF land.
UA.
And that's a big difference.
UA.
That, sorry,
UA.
UA land, yes. So that's something that I brought up, is that UAF is a campus university, and this qualifies all land that is owned by UA.
Okay, down here.
So I think the intent of the motion, as you've discussed it, is clear, but I have a concern that the statement as written is just too vague and not and doesn't actually capture the intent that you have explained. It says, we oppose the adoption of a tobacco-free policy. It wouldn't take a lot of effort for someone to turn that around and say, well, they're really supporting tobacco use on campus. It seems to me that it should be reworded to say, we already have a policy. It sets bounds that discourage or that prevent tobacco use in public spaces. We feel that that's adequate, and going further is unworkable. And so you know, to actually capture the rationale behind it in the motion, because I think the wording as written there, if someone just takes that in isolation, could easily be misinterpreted.
And my hope in the rationale behind the motion, I wanted to keep the resolution very short and very, so that there was no confusing. And I tried to include the rest in the rationale. It's trying to speak to exactly what you said. Yes, we recognize that there are negative health consequences. It's not like we love tobacco. We don't. I don't. But the adoption of a statewide zero tolerance policy on tobacco is something that we oppose. That's. But if you're not comfortable...
Well, I'm not comfortable because, again, I think that just that motion in isolation doesn't contain enough explanation. And so as it's written, I wouldn't support it, even though I support the intent of it. I wouldn't support the current wording myself.
Okay, thank you. All right. Yes, John?
Yeah, I have a question more about what's going on here procedurally. You have a small group of students at Anchorage, and I'm glad that they're getting involved in shared governance and doing all these things. But since when do they get to essentially hijack the Regents and set items on agenda to set policy for someone else? I'm a little concerned about how that works at all. What is the procedure for essentially changing Regents' policy? Recently, we reviewed Regents' policy at their behest, and are we always going to be at the whimsy? Is this going to be something that has a specific agenda slot on a Regents meeting, or is this just something coming up in public comments? This seems a little strange to have small groups like that. It opens the door to bombard the Regents with a lot of stuff that they shouldn't be bombarded with. It seems the sort of place, I would suggest to the SGC that this is the sort of thing that should go, A, be regulated campus by campus. If they want to do that UAA, that's great, and bring it up through their own chain of command, and they probably get a whole lot more support and learn a little more about the governance system than how this is working right now. This seems a little odd.
I would certainly agree with you. I'm asking us to pass this resolution as by way of saying that we are not happy with this idea of coming up with a system-wide ban on tobacco use, that this is ham-fisted or a sledgehammer approach to solving tricky problems?
In the campus, we have also employees that are not UAE, for example, National Weather Service. They do smoke on the entrance of. We come in and out, and we see the cloud of smoke. But they are here, and you know, there's nothing we can do about it.
But rules about what you can do on the property does not mean that they only apply to UAF employees. I mean, for example, there are lots of hospitals that don't allow smoking anywhere on hospital grounds, and that includes visitors as well as patients as well as staff.
And keep in mind, we're not debating a resolution to ban tobacco. We're discussing a resolution that.
In terms of eventually saying that we already have in place policy for tobacco use.
And the point being, I think, that you wanted that included in the resolution.
So could I just propose that we amend it to say that we oppose adoption of a policy over and above what we already have? Your concern was wanting to keep it short. That's pretty short.
Okay. That's an amendment that's been offered. Do I have a second to that amendment? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. It seems like a fairly clear wording change. Did you capture that all right, Jane? Oh, okay. would you do me the favor? Well, I think I can read it. The UAF Faculty Senate opposes adoption of a tobacco-free policy across the University of Alaska system over and above what's in existence. At
this time or something.
What's that?
At this time.
About just the new sentence, we feel the current policies are adequate.
Yeah.
Boom.
Okay, we feel the current policies, yeah. Okay, so the resolution is exactly as it is with another sentence that says?
We feel the current policies are adequate.
Okay.
Are sufficient, not adequate. Adequate is something negative. Sufficient is.
Yeah, right, good.
Okay, sufficient. Let's not get too into wordsmithing, otherwise we're going to need to table this and bring it up later.
Okay. So can you tell us what's the wording on that again?
The UAF Faculty Senate opposes adoption of a tobacco-free policy across the University of Alaska system. We feel policies in place are sufficient.
Well, aren't those two opposing statements?
No.
You oppose tobacco-free policy.
That's right.
That's what the sentence says. You oppose tobacco-free policy.
We,
everywhere. It can easily be viewed as everywhere on campus.
No.
Yes.
Say everywhere.
Okay. It seems like this. We're getting bogged down into this, and so this may be one of those situations where we're going to just have to table it and rework
it. Let's try it.
Which that's is in your rationale, and then we're good.
Or that's better.
Yeah, and that's sorry. Different than what we have now. Perfect.
That's better.
All right.
Can I move to table this, please?
Okay. Second. Okay, we got to vote on that. No discussion. Those in favor of tabling, say aye, please.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, the ayes have it. The motion is tabled until we bring it up some other time. Okay, very quickly, governance report, staff counsel. Brad, do you want to bring up anything else?
While he's coming up, this is Brian Rogers. I've been on for about half an hour.
Oh, I'm sorry, Brian.
No, that's fine. I enjoyed listening to the discussion.
Brad, would it be all right if the chancellor made his remarks now?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Given the hour, I'll be very brief, wishing a happy birthday to the President of the Faculty Senate, and just quickly noting that we'll be announcing shortly the fellows for the Chancellor's Innovation in Technology and E-Learning group that went out. Clearly, there's been some interest in that and in innovation generally. I really appreciate the faculty leadership on issues like the general education learning outcomes and others. I think that while it's important that we do what we can to standardize with the other two institutions, one size doesn't always fit all, and I appreciate that that the Senate continues to look out for UAS interests. And with that, I'll just stop and answer any questions people have.
Are there any questions for the Chancellor? Thank you, Chancellor Rogers. And Brad?
Actually, you know, I apologize. I see it's 3 o'clock, and really the core of what I had to say was that we have that survey, and we'll get that back to you. So I think any other remarks I have can wait for another time.
Fantastic. Thank you, Brad. Anyone from ASUAF? And I believe Danny is not here for athletics. And Tony Rickard for United Academics.
Tony is not able to make it this semester, so I'm trying to find an alternate for that one. I'm trying to find somebody else who will represent you next time onwards.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And UAFT, Jane.
Just at the UA Joint Healthcare Committee's meeting this Friday.
What are the big issues that are on the agenda at the moment?
Cecile, I'm sorry, I just can't even remember at the moment.
I understand that.
But the agenda is on the web page.
Okay.
There you go. Okay, any public comment? Okay. Members' comments? Questions? Announcements? Yes, please. Go ahead.
Yes. Oops. Is it open? Yeah. Hi, everybody. I just want to make a quick announcement that the People's Endowments Board has a call for proposals open. It's until the 28th of October. It specifically tries to serve needs that are otherwise not funded. If you want to improve the campus or some events, do some events on campus or something like that, there's a call for proposals out there, and I'm reporting that to you just as my function as a representative to the People's Endowments Fund. So those who don't know what it is, please check it out or contact me. Otherwise, the proposals are due on October 28. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any other announcements? And committee chairs, are there any things in your reports that you'd like to highlight for the Senate? Otherwise, please just read them, I guess, is the bottom line.
There'll be a test next week.
All right. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Hello.
Second. Thank you.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.